A fresh surge of adrenaline drowned the command. His mind cleared again, and he realized the flames were burning outside the ship. Its superheated hull must have ignited dry grass or deadwood around the crash site. There was no strong wind blowing. That would help to keep the fire contained. How much available fuel was there to feed the flames? There were trees. He thought he remembered trees in those last desperate moments before they struck the ground. But since he didn't appear to be in the midst of a raging forest inferno, perhaps I won't be burned alive after all. But he could still starve, or bleed to death from an untreated wound, or freeze if Zagula's night temperatures plunged. The ship could be perched on the edge of a cliff. One earth tremor or a strong wind could send it hurtling into a ravine, and he'd be crushed to a paste. In other words, Kenobi, he thought, don't just lie here. Get up. Get out. Take control and find a way out of this mess. Still, his recalcitrant body refused to listen.
Die, Jedi. Die, Jedi. Die, Jedi. Die.
Without warning, with a swiftness that stole his laboring breath, the ship vanished around him, and he was back on Tanab. 13 years old again, skinny and scared, screaming in horror as the fire beetles feasted.
Qui-Gon! Qui-Gon! Help me!
But Qui-Gon couldn't hear him. Qui-Gon was dead. Suddenly, he was 25, still a Padawan, fighting the Sith. Trapped between force fields, he saw the Zabrak assassin strike, saw the shock and pain in his master's face as the Sith's scarlet lightsaber thrust home, felt the Sith's vicious triumph, felt his own grief and rage. And on the floor of the cavern, on brutal Geonosis, rendered helpless by two lightsaber cuts, he watched Dooku toy with bold, rash Anakin. Silver hair gleaming, teeth bared in a smile, the ageless Sith, the treacherous Jedi, prowled around Anakin with insolent ease, deflected each blinding attack with casual, consummate skill, forced the error, and took Anakin's arm. He came back to himself shouting, "Anakin! Anakin!" "Sorry," said a tired, familiar voice. "I'm afraid you're stuck with me." "Organa!" The senator knelt beside him, a steadying hand on his shoulder. Confusion and horror surrendered to a deluge of relief. He let his head fall back.
"You're not dead?"
"Not quite," said Organa. "Believe me, I'm as surprised as you are." His olive skin had a greenish cast to it. He had a black eye and a split lip. His left arm was supported by a makeshift sling, the sleeve of a sacrificed shirt. His usually immaculate clothing was dirt-smudged and wrinkled, his trousers torn at both knees. Obi-Wan's heart eased its racing.
"Senator, Master Kenobi."
Because of the split lip, Organa spoke slowly and with great care.
"So, do you want to say it first, or will I?"
Obi-Wan frowned.
"Say what? I told you so? And how would that help?"
His head was pounding.
"Where have you been?"
"Outside," said Organa. "Exploring."
"Exploring?"
he thought, then said,
"Wonderful."
The senator raised an eyebrow.
"It's been nearly an hour since we crashed. You were unconscious. I got bored." "So you played tourist. And what did you find?"
"Not a lot."
"There's a fire."
Organa shrugged, one-shouldered.
"I started that. Thought we might need it come nightfall. Given what's happened, I'm not prepared to accept the sensor readings at face value. If this place does have predators, fire should make them think twice about attacking us." "Very enterprising."
"Thank you." Organa sat back on his heels.
"Our bad luck with communications equipment continues, by the way. The ship's commsat array is completely destroyed, and the emergency transponder beacon smashed. No hope of getting a message out, even if anyone was listening for us."
Which was unlikely. The chances of his last message reaching the temple were slim to none.
"I see." Look, you're banged around, said Organa, but I don't think anything's broken. He grimaced. At least not physically.